When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Forever Dog.
When your town has let you down, when your porch has fallen short, when you're too worn out to run and need some ribs or a Cinnabon, you need a place for rock, a place for roll, a place where Oakland Raiders merch is sold, a Sublime Hot Topic and Billabong, a place where you can purchase a candy thong. So let's go take a walk. Let's all go to City Walk tonight, tonight.
Podcast The Ride presents The City Walk Saga, a daily, 19-part, extremely necessary series exploring the stores, restaurants, and wonderful magic that make up Universal City Walk Hollywood.
Podcast The Ride, City Walk Saga, Sector 13. And if you thought that the pace was going to start to pick up at this point and we'll knock out some quick ones, you're dead wrong, because there is a lot to this sector, and let's dive right in. I'm Scott Gardner. Mike Carlson is here.
Yeah, I think a lot of the ones that are like coming up too, we have to do 2 hours on them.
Mm-hmm.
So like,
the notion
yeah.
that we were going to do a lot of mini episodes is
bullshit
out the door. Mm-hmm. Clear a lot of space in your fucking megabytes. Mm-hmm. Jason Sheridan's joining us as well.
Yes, I would advise people to use personal days, paid time off, to start clearing out some of these on their listening cues,
or just maybe less sleep for the duration of this. Just like carve out some time, you can just sleep from like 3 to 5 a.m. and the rest of it should be filled with City Walk Saga.
That is if after 2 weeks people are still listening, because mm-hmm. there's a good chance these are just sitting unlistened to now in people's podcast app
for years.
They've unsubscribed and it's just sitting there now, and they're like why did my phone is out of space, it's out of storage, and then they like look in the thing where you go to five phone storage and it's like, why is there 5 gigabytes of podcast? And then they just delete it, and then I
hope this inspires people to get some bigger phones, and that we've been creators of commerce in the world, and for Apple or whatever phone provider. And joining us for the first time, landing in a big way in the City Walk Saga, what an honor to start this way. You may know him from Jimmy Kimmel Live, from his podcast Struggle Session, or for giving no fucks on Twitter. It's Jack Allison.
Well, thanks for having me, guys. And there's just something kind of freeing, based to piggyback on what Mike was saying about this episode going unlistened to in people's podcast app. Like, there's something just freeing about being on a lost episode and knowing that as it's being recorded, it's a lost episode. We can really say anything here.
Can be mad at you.
No one can be mad at me for the stuff I say on this podcast. I finally feel free to say my opinions.
Yeah. Unlike the pressure of a regular podcast, which is guaranteed to be listened to by millions upon millions of people.
You guys have gone to the effort here of winnowing away all the listeners so that we can finally say the things we really want to say about City Walk.
Yes, as long as that's the case. Now this is you're a politically active person, and your podcast is very political. I'm trying to think how this overlays onto City Walk. It's not a proper, governed body, necessarily. And maybe the question is,
maybe it should
is
be.
It better that way? Should it be more regulated? Should there be regular elections?
City Walk is obviously a classic example of a corporocracy. What I mean? This is what happens when the fat cats at the top make all the decisions, and the little people, the activists, the voters, you got to get out there and vote. November, have to vote. You must vote.
Sure, get out there and vote, everybody. Get out there and
raise your voice and get out there and vote. Without a voice, you know, CityWalk has just ran roughshod over, you know, I mean, you have to get a permit to do like a dance number there. You know what I mean?
Like, and to twirl around with some chains and necklaces, yeah, or, you know, the kind of street performance.
So I think
you
we're
see
seeing
there
an unfettered corporocracy, and I think Section 13 actually is a good example of some of the gentrification we see happening at CityWalk for the worse. For the worse.
I do. There is a story that I'll bring up where CityWalk and the movie theater actually do intersect with legitimate LA politics. We can get into that. There's been some, I don't know if you guys know all this, like acts of violence have taken place at that theater. There's a lot there, but before we get into that, we should find out what it is we're talking about at all. And so we turn to the sector keeper.
Boys, and Jack, today's sector is Sector 13. Things from Another World, Universal Cinema, Five Towers Outdoor Stage, in the former simulator ride. Good luck, boys!
So we're talking Things from Another World, the Universal Cinema.
Mm-hmm. And before that, but I think around the Things from Another World space, the simulator ride that was up there probably until the mid 2000s. I couldn't tell you exactly. Should we start with that one? Should we start with the past
and a GameStop? Right, it became a GameStop.
Oh,
afterwards.
Good point. I missed that entirely. Yeah. Okay,
I got a couple. Yeah,
you know your history, kid.
And Jack, just get you up to speed. Our listeners have heard this every day for many days. The Sector Keeper is the he's simultaneously a child who died of a staph infection in the Danzig Fountains. He's the ghost of that child, but he's also an endless being,
for sure. Yeah,
a timeless being who represents the spirit of CityWalk.
I'm well aware of the Sector Keeper, and I have been aware. I've gone to CityWalk for my entire life, so you know I've heard the lore of the Sector Keeper. Actually, I think for the first time from a grizzled waiter at the Gladstones when I was a boy. So I'm well aware of the Sector Keeper and the lore surrounding.
It's good of him to start getting the word out and to even tell such a tragic tale to a child. But you know, you're never too young.
I never stepped into those fountains again because of the tragic tale of the Sector Keeper.
That's smart. Good thing you got
every
to
time
you.
I go up there to CityWalk now, I start yelling at all the kids, like, get out of there, get out of there. You don't know what might happen. But it hasn't gone. It's been fine. No one's... Yeah. They still play, but
people
whatever
are happy that you're yelling at their kids. They yeah, yeah. for safety.
They think I'm a street performer.
Yeah, you got a permit to do it. That's right. So you're a Valley native. So you've gone to CityWalk forever.
Sure.
Before we get specific, any particular cherished CityWalk memories?
Well, you know, when I was in a middle school, I lived in Sherman Oaks there.
Wonderful.
And so, you know, we had the Rapid bus that would basically just, you know, five stops or so, like directly from you know, right where I lived at, like Ventura and Woodman. You know, you could for just a few dollars get on the Rapid bus, and it would let out right at the bottom of CityWalk. It would let out right there, and you could take the tram up. And so what I would do during that time is, like, for a while one of us had a season pass, and it was like before the way the season passes are now, so we would like try to like sneak that one in and out and whatever.
Oh, you could trade it?
You could have somebody like sneak it out in a pocket or something like that, if I'm remembering correctly.
Okay.
But then the scam I really started to run was that you could like just put highlighter on your hand and smear it really bad, and then say you went in the water fountain and like get yourself wet, and you'd be like, it got smeared, and they would just like let you in.
Because that was a theme park trope for years, is that you would get your hand stamped when you were leaving,
and that was the only thing.
Now
they check the ticket again, they check everything again. You still get your hand stamped, but it's perfunctory. I don't know why you still get your hand stamped, to be honest with you. There's no reason, because you have to show the ticket again. But yeah, so the thing back then was to just do highlighter in the hand, smear it up, or if you could get one person in, like, I would say that I lost my hat on the Jurassic Park ride, and then they would walk you into Lost and Found, and then, like, stop paying attention to you, so then you could just go walk out through the line, get your hand stamped, and if you really quick, like, put the hand stamp on someone else's hand, then they would also have the stamp, and so you could just keep running that over and over.
Oh, you press back of hands together.
Yeah, so it's like, if it's fresh, you just go, bam, and then you both walk in.
We, so on the podcast, we all are very, like, good boys, especially when we were children. children. What was like the age when you started like feeling comfortable lying to strangers?
I don't know that there's a time in my life I didn't feel comfortable lying to strangers. I don't know. Another one, and this one is not that nice. And, you know, I don't say that anybody should do this or whatever, right. But like you could ostensibly get a front of the line pass if you just, they rented wheelchairs for like $14 at Universal. And so if you just rented a wheelchair, you would get to go to the front of the line for every single ride, like your whole party. This was before the Fast Pass and everything like that. And the extra cool part about that was that you don't have to go down the escalators. They have like a secret like monorail thing and
that
takes you down. Like you take an elevator and then you take a little private monorail to the bottom. And you know, so we did that as well. And you know, I don't think we took away any opportunities from people with actual disabilities from getting to the front of the line.
There was a much more grander, garish version of that where people would, you know, run tour groups with like handicapped or mentally disabled people. Essentially, like rich people would rent them for the day.
How nice!
And then go through.
That's right.
Yeah.
In Florida, it was a big scandal.
I think it was as easy as for us. We were just like, he like sprained his ankle, and like I don't know. Yeah. Like, save your money. You don't have to rent a disabled person to get to the front of the lines. Like,
but now we're taking work away from.
That's true.
Also, this whole impersonating disabled people and pretending you're in a wheelchair, this is all something Sacha Baron Cohen would do.
And I think that that's a little bit unpalatable, to be honest with you. Like, I think in this era, it's not really the time to be doing comedy like that. So, you know, I think that, you know, we should stand
right to be upset and to not allow it.
We should stand strong against Sacha Baron Cohen here and say that what he did was mean, and I don't condone any kind of meanness in comedy ever.
Mm-hmm. But luckily his new series, and probably a little old by the time people hear this, that is on Showtime, which, like these episodes, it makes all his entire show a lost show. So if you're worried about being offended by it, you won't
see
have
it.
Seen it.
I thought that the announcement said on BitTorrent when they were when they said what the show was going to be.
Well, any show you see announced, yes, the secret text
we're gonna
is
be,
it's on BitTorrent.
We're
going to
be launching on the Showtime and BitTorrent.
Blockchain. Blockchain streaming services. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get into the as I said, let's go into the past here of this sector. So there, when did this open? I want to say early 90s. We were saying right before we started recording, it was very difficult to even find the name of the simulator attraction that used to be up there.
Did
it's
you find
where
it?
The comic book store is now.
I looked a little, but like I didn't know that. I didn't really know how to start searching for it, and it seemed like you already had so much on the simulator, Scott. Or like it seemed like you
it
already
like
knew.
You quit. It sounds like you quit
in.
When Scott said he had a lot of stuff.
Well, I wasn't sure how much it was going to be, so I spent more time writing about other stuff.
It's not necessarily a ton, but I found a little more than I thought. The name of this thing evidently was ShowScan Presents Cinemania.
Yeah.
One of these catchy theme park names.
We all know ShowScan, a company that famously is still around today.
Of course. Yeah. There. ShowScan, as far as I knew, was a process and not necessarily a company, but I guess it was a company.
It's like TiVo, you know, it became so synonymous with the technology.
Sure. The technology being
moving chairs,
unviewed ride films. This company, this started in the early 80s, and if you ever went on a simulator ride that was not in a Disney or Universal park, it was probably ShowScan. I remember doing these freestanding rides in like the Luxor or the Excalibur in Vegas. They were all over the place. But here's what blew my mind today, that this technology was developed, by the way, by Doug Trumbull, eventual director of the Back to the Future ride. And the whole thing with ShowScan is it's 60 frames a second, which lets you do more realistic and less filmy movement. And it's bigger, it's 70 millimeter, bigger than other movies are. And they were looking for a place to start exhibiting this technology, and I found a big article from 1984 that claims that ShowScan, if a couple early tests get off the ground, that it will start being displayed in showbiz pizza palaces.
Oh, wow.
Across our nation. And it didn't really work out. I think they tried it in Dallas, and they tried it in Fairfax, Virginia, where there still is a Chuck E. Cheese, it having at some point been switched from showbiz pizza palace. Mm-hmm. And I read about the movie that they showed there, which now I think it was called New Magic. I didn't write the title down because it's hard to remember.
Well, that was
it didn't register with me.
That was the thing they showed in the Chuck E. Cheese.
This was a movie shown exclusively at not Chuck E. Cheese, but Showbiz.
Oh, Show Pizza. Season. Showbiz Pizza, right?
And the story of this movie of New Magic is that you're watching. Very simple. You're in the back of a Showbiz Pizza watching a 70 millimeter film about fireworks, and then the projector breaks, and the projectionist comes onto the screen and apologizes and says, really sorry, what else can I do while I have it here? It's going to take forever to fix the film. Well, I could show you this new technology that my boss, a sorcerer, is working on. And the sorcerer is played by Christopher Lee. And from there, I didn't read the plot.
Wow.
Christopher Lee is in a thing that only played at a Showbiz Pizza in Fairfax, Virginia. And I didn't read the plot of it too carefully, but like this guy ends up, the projectionist, it's similar to Mickey in The Sorcerer's Apprentice. The sorcerer is furious that he would dare try out this magic without explicit permission.
I mean, that's in the public domain, Angry Sorcerer, as like a go-to.
It's a big trope. TV tropes area if you go to that site. Among the things that happens is that the sorcerer makes the projectionist go into a guillotine, and the guillotine doesn't cut his head off, but it does put his head on the body of a spider, which is, there's a still of this on a website I found, it's very disturbing. And then the sorcerer, in the final indignity, turns him into Billy Bob, the mascot of Showbiz Pizza.
From the Rockefeller explosion.
Yes.
Wow. Correct.
And then it ends with the sorcerer saying, go get out there and entertain the kids.
Oh.
So then when you leave the movie, if you see Billy Bob walking around, you know that he is a punished projectionist.
Oh my God.
Isn't this
wild? Yeah. All new info to me this morning.
And you know, there's one thing children love, it's body horror.
Cronenberg-esque
body horror.
The kids just being like, mommy, rescue him.
He's a slave, mommy.
Let me ask you guys, because I remember these existing, but I never did them. Mm-hmm. Did your Dave and Buster's growing up, were there simulator theaters in your Dave and Buster's? Because there was in the Philadelphia one.
Growing up, when you say growing up, I was not privileged. I did not have a Dave and Buster's growing up.
Really? Yeah, neither did I.
Nor did we. Huh. They are new arrivals in Los Angeles.
Oh. Yeah. Huh.
I was at one the other night at Hollywood and Highland, and those have not... that's the last couple of years.
We had a place called Gameworks I got when I was 16, which is very similar to it, but no Dave and Buster's until many years later.
What about Funscape? Because that looms larger in my mind.
What is Funscape?
Funscape was Funscape was like a family kind of version of Dave and Buster's. It was a massive facility in Wilmington, Delaware. It was like three stories tall, mini golf, a 18th screen movie theater, laser tag, virtual reality, a Star Tours kind of simulator thing.
Where you're in a car as opposed to a theater.
Yeah, where you're in a car. I only ever remember, I think we did the mini golf once. The movie theater was like the first Regal movie theater in the Philadelphia area, and was notable for like being the first movie theater where my family was like, oh wow, this is full back seats, like a thing that is now ubiquitous now.
Really?
It used to be like really...
How did they have seats before?
It just like kind of like halfway stools? Like up your back. It was mostly like kind of like dumpier AMCs where we were, and this was like the first theater with like stadium kind of seat, tiered seating.
Maybe I just don't remember that seats used to be like that.
Yeah, I guess I remember when we had like AMC in Schaumburg went to like stadium seating.
And right, I remember that.
It was like it was a summer of stadium seating. Yeah. Everyone was obsessed.
I thought that had more to do with the height of the rows not being on
one level. That's what I thought stadium
rather
seating
than
had
the
more
back
to do
of
with
the chair. Because, you know, stadiums don't have high back chairs.
You're right. You're right.
It has more to do with it. It's not all just a flat space.
Yeah, it's like, it's
where
like
all
a stadium.
Like how the Vista is just a big flat, you know, it's not stadium style seating. And in fact, that theater is trash because it's not stadium style.
Stadium or nothing.
I hated it when it first started because I did not have a growth spurt yet. I mean, I had one growth spurt and kind of tapped out there. But it was hard for me to see over these high back chairs until a certain point.
So well, that's why you got to have the stadium seating, actually.
Yeah,
I remember being actually very happy about stadium seating as a similarly short man because it did help a lot, actually. It used to be a problem like with people like being too tall in front of me in movies.
So Funscape went under. It lasted a few years. But the movie theater is still open and going strong, but it was on the third floor. So for a few years, you used to have to walk through an abandoned arcade, like an abandoned mini golf and a haunted house, essentially. You had to walk through the creepiest thing, and then they reopened some of the arcade, and then they just massively redid it so that the lobby was on the other side of the building, and then they turned a lot of it into office space, and you still had to go up a bunch of escalators to get to the screening, you know, to get to the theaters. Man. But it was like, it was a big thing. It was like the era of laser tag was everywhere. There was like a
wonderful time
down the street. Yeah, a wonderful time. That laser tag also too, I remember, was just people sat in chairs. It was split in half, and there were chairs, and you were like sitting in chairs, zapping at targets and each other.
Seated laser tag.
It's the only time I had ever seen it.
The lazy man's laser tag.
We're really committed to the no running.
I did the VR once, and they're like, right as they put the helmet on, they're like, "Oh, you got to take your glasses off," and I'm like, "Oh no!" And so I was just a blurry laser, like Star Fox original. Star Fox quality graphics laser tag. Or not VR.
So we'll do the Funscape episode. We'll do the Schomburg Mall episode.
But
we have to start saving our if we start talking about other malls and arcades.
We'll
never get through 19
you guys
parts
do a
of
whole,
this one.
A whole month on that mall, the Schomburg Mall.
That's where it's at. The Schomburg Mall is starting to become. We're building it up into an event. Okay. I'm excited.
It's like the McDonald's for No Boys.
We're gonna wear tuxedos. When we do the show, we're going to podcast in tuxedos. No one will see it, but...
Okay, so the simulator ride. You did this at some point.
Yeah, I did the simulator ride a couple times. I remember that it was a Devil's Mine ride. And I also remember that it was, you know, sort of one of these things that is such a City Walk classic. Something that, is fun to do, but not that fun. that is just obscenely overpriced and will make your parents mad that you want to do. Like, these rides were, like, at most... like I want to say like 10 minutes long, like they were not, these are not long rides, and I think they cost like $15 or something like that, so
I
this
think
is
so.
Like it's like 2018 movie prices for like a, you know,
I think it's over in 7 minutes. And
I read 5 minutes was how long.
Have you got,
I was trying to be generous to you.
I don't want to slow us down here, but I found the Devil's Mine ride on YouTube. Would you guys like to pause very briefly, go on the Devil's Mine together, and then pick it back up?
This used to cost $15. You can do this for free now?
Now we're doing it in our apartment during a Podcast Lost episode. We'll take a quick break, and we'll be right back with our thoughts on Devil's Mine ride. And we're back. We've just survived the Devil's Mine ride. And actually, if you want to pause it here and go on it yourself, just go to YouTube and search Devil's Mine Ride 1991, and you can know what we're talking about. But in case you don't feel like stopping, we want to describe what we just experienced.
It was an experience. That is the best way to...
So a grizzled old prospector says... You're in a mine cart,
right?
And you get to the point where you would start the tour, And he says they fixed it up real nice for you.
You're here to tour the mine. We fixed it up real nice for you. It's going to be real smooth and fun.
Right. And, the old prospector, I'm looking at his IMDb right now.
Oh.
His name is Paul Harper, and he apparently plays a lot of old prospector types.
Is he still with us?
This doesn't say, but he's been in things like Ghost Rock, which is a cowboy thing.
Sure.
Wild Side, which is a cowboy thing. The Blue and the Gray, which appears to be a Civil War thing. You know, he's a guy who, he's a type is what I'm trying to
character
say.
Character actor.
Mm-hmm. Like Royal Dano, who often played Lincoln, as well as in the theme park world. So you're
the Wild Bunch.
Oh, wow. Hey, 1969. That's a legit.
How about that?
Hey, oh, boy. Good for him.
So Paul Harper, the old prospector, is about to usher you into a nice mine ride.
Seems like it's going to be a very calm and sort of normal mine ride at this point.
It's a tour of a historic mine, and you can see the facilities and how mining is done. But
He has no name.
He has no name.
He's not introduced.
It's unclear how you got the tickets for this. No. Not from him, I don't think.
And what you're doing, like, if are you some kind of mine inspector? Why are you just sitting, you know, in a mine cart already when you're just arriving? Before introducing yourself or meeting anybody at the, you know, the actual mining facility, you just took the liberty to jump right into a mine cart and start rolling on down the rail there.
Huh, yeah, which it kind of serves you right to end up going on a madcap adventure. Because, like, this isn't your mine. You have no right to...
Typically, you want to have them choose... I mean, I don't want to spoil what comes next, but typically you would have, you know, the mine operator, I would say, choose the path you want to go before you decide to step on into the mine cart there, but that's not what happens here.
Yeah, yeah. You might have made a presumption that there was only one mine car path, when in fact there is a second, and it is, quote, my kind of mine, which is to say poorly built... And with giant gaps and probably more bats than the other. I don't know. How much nicer was that other mine going
to
be?
Well, though? I don't even want to say that it's poorly built necessarily. It's just built to be an exciting roller coaster.
It's a,
it's
a madcap adventure, really. Yes. I mean,
well, it's really, I mean, it's, to put it in our terms, it's Jason's kind of mine, not Scott's kind of mine.
Right.
Me liking very mild thrills.
Exactly.
Yes. Right. So Jason's probably, you're not alarmed getting in this mine.
It just seems like the normal type of thrilling mine ride I usually take on vacations.
The other mine might have been like a dark mine ride where you just see like animatronic miners mining at like nuts, the like walls.
This was like more a CG. You know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of like the graphics in, if you know the Twitter account, Da Share Zone.
Sure, yeah. It's like the Share Zone.
Which is a lot of CGI skeletons.
Yeah.
The graphics of, so yeah, so when you go on the mine, from my just, you know, the naked eye, I think that's all CGI. I don't think there's any practical effects being displayed. It reminds me of Superman 64 with all the the fog that's going on because they didn't want to have to render backgrounds.
Right.
So it's like a very foggy.
Well, it's the draw distance, you can't get that much draw distance. Yes,
it's a real foggy mine is what I'm trying to say.
Which actually sort of heightens the danger of it. Yes. I mean, you're careening around on this roller coaster that's been built inside of a mine. You can't even see a few feet ahead of you because of, you know, technological limitations, but also because of art direction.
There's not even music to remind you of the upstairs world, the world outside of this mine.
Well, that would break from the reality of it. It's really just, it's nothing but mise en scène. Once you get into the actual... mine.
They made this with very specific filmmaking rules, and it wouldn't be Prospector Paul's kind of mine if it had music.
Yeah.
An odd thing also is that I found another video of a Devil's Mine ride, and it's the same intro and outro, which is live action with the old Prospector, but the middle is a different mine ride with updated CGI, which I found worse. I thought the 2000 CGI was kind of showier and stupider than 1991, as we, in keeping with the general feeling of we've made great advancements, but then a 2000 movie is unwatchable, whereas Jurassic Park still really holds up.
Kind of like Fantasia 2000, you know?
Oh, yeah.
The original Devil's Mine Ride is just timeless, and Devil's Mine Ride 2000, you know, they went a little too far with the technology.
Is anyone... I can't remember offhand who introduces all the segments in Fantasia 2000, but why do I want to say one of them has been Me Too'd? That might be a false accusation I'm leveling. I mean,
we have to check that.
Yeah. I think just statistically, that's a good bet.
In any film with multiple celebrities.
Is it John Lasseter, perhaps?
I don't think he does an introduction, but maybe I'm thinking that because...
I could see Matt Lauer doing an introduction to Fantasia 2000.
Is it Morgan Freeman?
He could be in there. I don't know. James Toback,
Charlie Rose,
James Toback,
Disney legend, James Toback,
a very young T.J. Miller,
Itzhak Perlman. I think
he's fine.
Yeah, he's fine. This is a pretty Steve Martin, James Levine, Bette Midler, James Earl Jones, Itzhak Perlman, Angela Lansbury, Quincy Jones, Teller. Penn and Teller.
Okay.
James Levine isn't one of the conductors who's run afoul of the law.
He's not one of the bad conductors.
No. There's a few bad conductors.
The new conductors bad boy club.
Here he is.
Is he okay?
I don't know. He seems okay.
I shouldn't be besmirching James Levine without proof. I don't want to start getting that out there.
Yeah, this is turning into a witch hunt. This you're just trying to find phantoms where they aren't there in Fantasia 2000's IMDb.
On December 2nd, 2017, the New York Times published a front page story containing detailed accounts of four men in their 40s to 60s alleging long-term sexual abuse of them by Levine.
Scott Gardner for the win.
All right, I did right when you called it a witch hunt and I was starting to get red in the face.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
I should know better than, you know.
Let me just show that picture I showed you again. And how would this man ever be accused of anything creepy?
He looks like the old prospector.
He does. This man is one of the scariest looking men I've ever seen.
Yeah. Conductors. You gotta watch out for conductors.
By looking at him. So, anyway.
What is going on with conductors?
that took as many twists and turns as a Devil's Mind, right?
Yeah, the Devil's Mind itself.
You didn't go on any other of the show Scan Presents?
I do remember going on another one, and I don't remember what it was. I did want to say, you know, I mentioned very astutely during when we were watching Devil's Mind Ride, and I think it was a smart thing that I want to mention now on the podcast proper, that, you know, the Devil's Mind Ride kind of has in it a lot of the DNA that you now see in a lot of these other rides where you're watching a movie and sitting in a chair.
Yeah, Screen Rides. Despicable Me, Simpsons.
Yeah, absolutely. You have the track ending and the car, you know, falling and landing on another track later, which you see in The Simpsons and also in Minion Mayhem.
Cody just did Kung Fu Panda, and there's all the same stupid tricks they've been doing since 1991.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in a lot of ways, like the Devil's Mind Ride was, you know, an innovator.
The Velvet Underground of roller coasters. Yeah,
it's the birth of a nation of roller coasters.
Perfect.
Everyone, the Devil's Mind Ride was not a big hit, but everyone who wrote it, they started a ride.
They made that accurate.
I don't remember what other ride I went on there, but it was some. I went on some ride. I feel like it was like Tron-ish or something. And afterwards, me and my friend got interviewed by like a film crew because they were trying to like get like
testimonials
about how it was good. And I remember like just stupidly being like, I didn't think it was very good, and they like got rid of me right away. And my friend who was like a kid actor like was like very emotive and was like, whoa, it was cool, swoosh, and all this stuff. And they didn't even have me sign a release. They did not even go through the perfunctory. Like, they didn't even. But they had him sign and all this
shit.
Even
back then, you were a provocateur.
I was.
And then your buddy knew how to play the game.
I know. I know. What just a fool.
Couldn't do it. You couldn't bring yourself to do it.
Could that friend not? Is Colin Trevorrow. He's
Did you ever think about a way? Did you ever get to write it for free by like sneaking on or lying to the?
I never, you know, it was locked down. The scene sense. What was it called again? The
Cinemania.
I think it was pretty locked down there. I mean, that's like, I mean, I was able to sneak into the movie theater, which we'll talk about shortly. You know, that's a pretty easy one to get into. But never the movie.
It is wild to me that they built a simulator ride next to a theme park. Yeah. I know this isn't the first time I've heard of that happening.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess Star Wars The Void is built next to a theme park, but that is a very different experience. And you know,
but at the time, when it opened, no simulators in Universal Studios.
I guess that's true. Universal
now, where that's all
it's a pilot program. And
warmer, sunnier days are calling. Fuel up for them with Factor's no prep, no mess meals. That's right, they're heat and eat, ready in just 2 minutes. I recently tried some vegetarian meals because I am a big boy who needs to eat more vegetables. I tried great entrees like the Caribbean spiced tofu with black beans, rice, mango salsa, and coconut jerk sauce. And the garlic and herb roasted mushrooms. That's right, I'm a big-time mushroom boy. With 35 different meals and more than 60 add-ons to choose from every week, you'll always have new flavors to explore. Head to factormeals.com/podcastride50 and use code podcastride50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month. That's code podcastride50 at factormeals.com/podcastride50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active.
The movies are back, baby, and if you're looking for a weekly podcast to keep up with all the new releases and all the hottest news and rumors coming out of Hollywood, check out Movies, Baby, with 5 Ys. Is Emma Stone on track for greatest actress of all time?
What's the best Godzilla movie of all?
What's up with John Cena?
Love Lies Bleeding? We'll take more where that came from.
What movie should have won Best Picture at this year's Oscars?
Hint. The name of 2 months, and they ain't close together.
Those are just some of the topics we've discussed on recent episodes of Movies, Baby. Every week on Movies, Baby, Forever Dog co-founders and lifelong movie fanatics Brett and Joe break down the hottest movie news, review the latest releases, shout out forgotten classics, and prophesy the future of Hollywood. You can listen to Movies, Baby wherever you get podcasts, and you can watch Movies, Baby live every Thursday night on YouTube at Movies, Baby with 5 Ys. Movies, Baby!
And really, like, it takes kind of the same place as I would say that the skydiving
the indoor skydiving thing
now takes, which is like stupid, really expensive shit that like kids are going to like beg to do, and then the parents have to do it. You know what I mean? Like it's like it's actually even in Sector 13, just as the iFly is now. So maybe there's something psychologically about that area that, you know, puts it in a good spot for that kind of thing.
It's on the way out the door. You might be heading to the parking garage, and it's like one last thing suck your money up on the way out. Just like Margaritaville, the final stop, or the Raiders store.
The Raiders store is really the final stop.
Yeah.
I never got a souvenir. All right, looks like you're getting a Raiders t-shirt.
Well, you want to move into the movie theater, or up to you. You guys freestyle it. The Sector Keeper isn't here. You know, he doesn't have us by the balls right now, so we can go whichever way we want. Movie theater, comic store, is a path like the old Prospector presents.
Let's talk about Things from Another World. I have some background on Things from Another World. It's a comic store chain out of Portland, Oregon, much like Voodoo Donuts came out of Portland. Founded by Mike Richardson, who would go on to found Dark Horse Comics.
Oh, I didn't know that.
The long time, before Marvel, the long time home of the Star Wars comics and Aliens and Predators comics and a bunch of original work. Things from Another World, currently the third largest comic chain in the country. I think Mile High Comics is number one, and I would guess Midtown Comics might be number two.
This also, by the way, not that hard to be on the top five comic retailer list in America.
Yeah, right. I mean, if you're still hanging on after the 90s.
I think number three and four only have one shop.
Yeah, right.
So this used to be down by... where the studio store is now. It is now, the studio store expanded into the original Things from Another World space. With but the, like...
The spaceship bursting out of it.
Yeah, with
that's
the spaceship
why that was
bursting
there originally.
Out. Yeah. But I think it was a cordial agreement. They're like, well, we want to expand the studio store. We can move you down to a bigger space sort of thing. So they moved down a couple years ago.
The rarely achieved City Walk move. Pulled off by Tony Romas.
Tony Romas.
By Things from Another World. Is there another one? Have we found?
Well, in Florida, the Hard Rock. The original Hard Rock moved.
Oh, that's
next
right.
To Hard Rock
it was
Live.
Kind of in the park by the Psycho House, and now it's that glorious
you would
Coliseum.
You through the kid zone to get to either the Hard Rock Cafe or the Psycho
the
House
Psycho
in
House.
Orlando.
That's right. That's right.
So,
well, things, so good on you, Things from Another World. You did it.
Things from Another World, the original one, I honestly think had more actual comics than the current one.
It is true.
It did, for sure.
It had a much bigger like stock of comics. The current one is kind of suffers from what I'll call Barnes & Noble syndrome, where it's like, we're a bookstore, but we have a lot of statues and Funko Pops.
Right. There's, it's a toy store. It's a toy store.
It's a toy store and a few... You know, walls of comics, a few racks of comics.
Yeah, does the current Things from Another World even have like weekly
it
comics?
Does.
Are they releasing?
They're in like, the back. It's like on the back wall.
Yeah,
wow,
but like shameful. The hits. It's just like it's start it's a like, pull list there, it, or
I liked the old Things from Another World.
I
to be
too.
Honest with you, and I think that little corner of Universal was actually kind of Universal City Walk. You know, not to be like a City Walk hater, but that kind of corner over there, like, was one of the spots that had some kind of like unique flair to it felt like to me, like, but like between Ruben's Red Hots and
was that there
Ruben's Red Hots was right next to Things from Another World. Ruben's I think is still there, right? The little hot dog place.
Jody Maroney's.
I think it became
Jody Maroney's. Sorry, no, I'm sorry. Then it was Jody Maroney's the entire time, but
and now it's Ludo.
Is it Ludo now?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So
Ludo's
like
good.
I remember Jody Maroney's and Things from Another World kind of being the spot. Like, that was the thing to do, is you'd go over to Universal City Walk. The rest, that's just corporate trash. That's all for the tourists. The real City Walk heads know that you go into the crowded, the very, you know, small corridored Things from Another World, it was horrendous in there. Like, it was like bad. It was like too crowded in there. They had just like squeezed too much stuff in there. But like, that was like how a comic shop is. It was like how comic shops are. Like, it was actually kind of weird that there was a like kind semi, you know, like, I'm not going to say like fully as good as other comic shops, but like a 70-80% comic shop was like in Universal City Walk.
Because that's the recurring thing, is how few of these stores have anything you would actually need day to day. It is not a shopping center with functional items, and they did, and I think the upstart Crow used to be a better bookstore, a more legitimate bookstore.
Oh yeah,
so it's like slowly peeled away from having anything but nonsense.
This has to do with the gentrification of the Universal City Walk. We're losing the local flair there.
You would find, like, I feel like too, now the new Things from Another World just has like, it's all Iron Man, it's all Game of Thrones, it's all this, like, you
it's
used to be able to
Alden
find
Alden Han Solo.
It's a lot of Alden Han Solo.
My Han Solo, the big forehead Han Solo. The Han Solo.
I have a really good feeling that we're going to find a lot of my toys in 6 months at this comic store.
That's going to be like in like Vegas, like how they have the E.T. like graveyard for the E.T. video game. They're going to have to bury like a million Alden Han Solo action figures in Vegas.
I mean, I just think the Funko Pop invasion of City Walk, Like, you know how some stores in LA now, you see a little sign that says, like, we take Bitcoin. In City Walk soon, you will be able to pay with Funko Pops.
Like, I think Funko Pops are the only Alden Han Solo toy that's getting the forehead correct, to be honest with you.
Well, you know where would be the perfect place to bury all the Alden toys?
Where's that?
In the old mine.
They can just add it digitally to a new special edition. A big pile of Aldens as you're careening through this mine.
Once the mine went under, we turned it into a public storage rental. So
you used to be like in the old store, though. You used to be able to. They would have like what I like about old like comic stores. You would have like a 1991 Star Trek The Next Generation toys just sitting on the shelf.
Because they've been there since that
time. They've been there that long. It's like Troy's mother toy.
Yeah.
No one bought it at the time, but I like Troy's
the dedication
mother.
Of comic shops that are like, this is never going down until somebody buys it. Like, this Watto toy from 1999, we will not sacrifice shelf space until somebody takes that away. Yeah. But, and honestly, at this point, somebody would buy the Watto toy.
Bastard.
Todd McFarlane. Toys.
I have those. I don't have Fat Bastard though, but I have the others.
The other things from another world in Portland are more traditional, you know, comic stores with pull lists and subscriptions.
It's
and
like
all
it
that
felt like things from another world felt like it was a real comic shop, and now it feels kind of similarly to how other stuff in City Walk feels like, where it's like the Dubai version of it. Like everything is at City Walk because like the flag, they just have to have the name of it up there or whatever. Yeah. Like it feels like it's things from another world in the sense that like they bought a sign that says things from another world.
I'm repeating material here, but I went up with a friend of mine who's a law professor and an intellectual, and he posed the theory that like Sephora, I bet this Sephora does not do the business that a typical one does, but it's about people pass by the word
for
Sephora on the way
it's
to
about
Universal
people
Studios.
People are visiting Los Angeles, and they're maybe from out of the country, and they're like, oh, this is like, it's Epcot is actually what it is. City Walk is Epcot. It's like meant to represent like what America is to like
miniature
visiting foreigners. Yeah.
And you might, it's you're actually, on vacation, you might be a little more willing to part with like a little treat for yourself.
Yeah,
a little souvenir.
Absolutely. But there's expensive sunglasses there and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, I want to go, like, I'll get like the John Varvatos sunglasses while I'm in America. Like, you know, what a little bit of fun for me. I'm like a real celebrity.
But the difference though is with Epcot though, in those stores, it's not been just rooted out. All like the, like, it's not just in the Japanese pavilion, like,
right.
It's just not Funko Pops of like Japanese Disney characters.
Epcot is a less accurate representation of America. I mean, Epcot is like this planned economy kind of like Disney thing. Like, it's like they're trying to keep like the purity of Epcot as being a representative of America. Uh-huh. But that's not really what America is. Like, Universal represents it better, where it's like what, like, you know, what America is like capital taking over. And so like that's Universal. Like, who has the most money, like, has representation at Universal City Walk. And you know, it's not like you go to Epcot. I never been to Epcot, but I assume it's like, you know, farmers milking cows and shit. I don't know. What is Epcot
like?
Well,
it's a world recreation. Uh-huh. There's some America, and you get an American. There's this thing.
But I'm
the
sure
American
it's like a
adventure.
Guy like doing steel or some shit or something in Epcot.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not true. That.
In the robot
what America
show,
is,
you see
is,
like steel workers.
What America is a service economy. You're getting a better sense walking through Universal City Walk of what the whole of America is like. It's like people working at Sephora's. It's what it is.
I mean, I think we have talked before about how it's you can see in City Walk taste changing from like, well, the candy store went away and now it's cupcakes and now it's frozen yogurt and now it's fancy donuts
but
and
crepes will always be there. Crepes will never ever crepes will never subside.
We all know the place that crepes hold in America at large, and it's never going away.
I think that's probably just because of like the high number of European tourists that are walking through there, and like that's the option, like how when you're in Japan there's a McDonald's or something like that, like that's the option of like, oh, let's not go crazy like and go to Hard Rock Cafe. Let's just get a crepe right now or whatever.
Crepes and Belgian fries. That's the other thing in the crepe place is fries with a lot of dipping sauce
options. With the mayonnaise and shit.
Oh, and which styrofoam plates. I know I talked about that on that sector. You are served a crepe, not traditionally easy to cut. I mean, you can cut it, but it's very thin and kind of spongy. And then if you cut too hard, you are cutting directly into styrofoam. Again, yeah, nice pins of styrofoam.
Really the table.
Yeah, yeah.
Is there more on the comic book story? Because I could. I have a decent. Well, feel free.
I just think it was when I was first coming to LA for like internships and stuff in school. I remember looking up, because I lived down the road at the Oakwoods, and I was looking up what comic stores are close by.
You were a child actor, right?
I was a child actor. I was in I was in the space show. No, I can't even remember.
Space cases.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
Right. Yeah. You're driving that little robot trash can suit around.
Yeah, that's right.
You fit the suit.
And I remember going like, wow, there's a comic store right, there's two like right down the road. And one of which was House of Secrets, which I ended up going to and still go to a lot.
Which is probably like the sixth biggest comic store in the world.
just because. It's always busy. One,
it's there. Yeah, because it exists.
Yeah. But I remember going, oh, there's one in another direction too. And then I like zoomed in on the map and I'm like, it's in the middle of City Walk? Like, because I had only known the Orlando City Walk, and sure enough, I was like, "Oh yeah, this is a place." But I am wondering. Is there anyone who goes every Wednesday like that is or was like, well, that's my shop. I go every Wednesday. I guess if you work at Universal.
I was going to say, I theorize people that work on the lot. I theorize that perhaps now, not maybe now, now that it's a new one, but if there was anyone going every Wednesday, I bet it's like people that are working on the lot every day and walk over there.
So Universal president Ron Meyer, looking for new comic properties to adoption, strolls up the hill each week.
When they made the Night Thrasher, do you guys know about this? I feel like I found out about this at an old job. There was a Night Thrasher pilot with Terrence Howard.
Wow.
A long time ago. I don't know if it ever got made, but there was like news stories about it in the trades.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Weird.
That's too bad. It didn't happen.
I know. Yeah. Well, fingers crossed.
It probably will happen, though.
Yeah.
Well, if you make it to the end of the great procedure of trying to get things made in Hollywood, then you're the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow potentially is having your work displayed at the Universal Cinemas theater.
Sure.
And this is a place that has been home to many, many premieres over the years. And there's a ton to talk about with this theater, but that seemed like a very unique aspect to me. And here's what I did with my limited time on the earth. I went on Getty Editorial Images and I found photos of all the premieres that ever took place at the Universal Studios Cineplex Odeon. Now, the Cineplex Odeon predates City Walk. It was there before City Walk was built. I think we talked about many days ago. So City
Back
Walk
when
actually
it was all just orange groves.
There was no you had to like make it through a forest.
Back in the day, you used either buy Tropicana, Florida's Best, or Universal brand orange juice made in Hollywood.
And avoid a lot of bees on the way into the theater, but if you made it, a great film was your reward. So I found going through photo after photo, I'm going to have to post like an Imgur. Is that the name of the?
Oh, yeah.
I will post a gallery of all of the stolen watermarked Getty editorial images I found because the.
You should pay the license. Come on.
Okay, yeah, you're right. All right, so $500
hey, support,
each.
Support artists.
Yeah, support the Gettys, please.
Even though he didn't want to get his grandson back, we need to support the Gettys.
Oh, is that Getty? Is Getty Images?
It's the same,
that's
only
a family.
I never thought about that.
Yeah. All these great old newspaper, the Gettys, the Hearst, are good friends.
A lot of fun. I love that they're all still around. It's just fun that we still get them around all
they're
the time.
Still affecting our day-to-day. Yeah. It's
cool. American royalty. People say the Kennedys. I think it's the weird old newspaper barons,
the DuPonts, the Hearst,
whose descendants all have the very specific breed. But there are Habsburgs.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So when I buy the licenses in perpetuity to all these photographs, which at about $500 each, you'll see a gallery that's about $8,000 total out of Scott Gardner's
get
pocket.
Get Alexis Nexus login.
You know what I think? You guys should do an Indiegogo to raise the money for buying the pictures. So you can, so if everybody out there just pitches in a little bit, you guys could raise the $8,000 to finally post these pictures.
You're right. Okay, so go to Indiegogo.com/ Odeon Memories. So we can do this all on the up and up. But so check, look on Twitter, and we'll have posted this once the goal's been reached. Mm-hmm. But like, okay, let me just list some of the movie premieres that happened up there. Some of the finest films of the 90s and 2000s. We're talking The Quest, The Frighteners, Dudley Do-Right, wow, with Brendan Fraser, wow, Ed, Primary Colors, live action Flipper, The Battle of Shaker Heights, Project Greenlight season 2, Cop and a Half. We're talking We're Back, A Dinosaur Story. We're talking Mo Better Blues. Was Peter Frampton at the premiere of Mo Better Blues? You better believe it. Ninja Turtles 3. Well, 2 and 3, but 3 had the added attraction of George Wendt in a t-shirt and gym shorts. Just dressed like he's sitting on the couch. So that'll be in the gallery. The premiere of The Lost World was up there. Right. Was Billy Idol at the premiere in an Arizona Diamondbacks XXL t-shirt and sweatpants?
No way. There's no way.
Hate to tell you guys, you're all struck out.
What?
Like the Diamondbacks never would.
Oh, it was going to be no.
And finally, the premiere of, I know this is an important film to all of us, Cole the Conqueror, with Kevin Sorbo.
Oh, sure.
Of
yeah.
Of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And,
foundational.
Yeah, one of the big properties of our time. Of course, you'll be happy to know Gene Simmons was at the premiere. Mm. And yes, of course, Kevin Sorbo rode into the premiere on a horse through City Walk.
Good.
If you want to see some of these photos, as well as some of the craziest fashions you've ever seen, the entire band Dishwalla at the premiere of American Pie wearing like mesh t-shirts, mm-hmm, nipple exposing mesh t-shirts.
Right.
It's a hell of a gallery, so please donate today. But the Cineplex is a place of the people. It's not just for big old movie stars and DuPonts.
They even give you the money back, you know, for the parking there.
They're the most generous vendor in all of City Walk. They give you, they hand you a like a bill, right?
They give you like $5.
They just hand you cash. To pay for
it's
your
still
parking.
Going. This system is still going. It's been totally.
Well, they changed it. They're trying to change it because they were like, "Oh, did you buy?" When we went up last time to go see a movie, they were like, "Did you buy the tickets on like movie whatever tickets.com?" Or I was like, "No, I bought them on Fandango." And they go, "Oh, never mind. You're just gonna have to get the $5." Like, there's a new. They're trying to do it where like it refunds you in app. But Fandango still has the old system of just throwing you a $5.
I like just getting the crisp $5 bill every single time.
I feel like for once the movie industry is giving back to you. What are some of your guys' favorite memories of going to this theater?
I'll say this: this is the theater in Los Angeles I've seen the most movies at.
Wow!
We've seen like the last 5 Marvel movies there.
Well, every movie that's like a big movie,
it's almost a tenth of them.
But I've seen we've seen DC movies there too. I've seen The Dark Knight there. I saw my first
screening of Batman versus Superman there. That was big. That was huge.
I got the best movie going experience of my life was there. Opening a night, and we mentioned him earlier. Opening night, Borat.
Oh wow!
House. The audience loving it. For so sure. Into it. It was so much fun.
I'll tell you, similarly, this is not Borat, which I saw at Comic-Con and had a similar experience. That was one of the most fun. Also, the Jackass movies are just so much fun. Never skip a Jackass in the theaters. But what I saw at Universal, which was a really fun experience, actually, was I saw Soul Plane on opening night.
Oh,
and
wow.
I like still think Soul Plane is funny because of like how much fun that theater experience was.
Wow.
I actually ran into Kevin Hart at the grocery store. This was before he was very famous as Kevin Hart, like shortly after Soul Plane. And I was like, I like you in Soul Plane. And he looked at me like, really? And was like, thanks. Like, and that's before, before, you know, the Kevin Hart, the luminary, you know, that towers above us today.
You might have given him the gumption to keep going. He might have given up. He might have been down that day.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. I did Mission Impossible 4. Oh, yeah. IMAX, seen, which yeah, was
four
wonderful.
And five and six.
I did two up there. I want to say maybe my 14th birthday was MI2 at City Walk. Very, very pleasant.
I saw
evening,
South Park Bigger, Longer, Uncut at City Walk. Whoa. I remember that, actually.
Something good with an audience?
I saw it with great with an audience, and also my mom was one of the moms that like brought other people's kids to see South Park like without permission. So that was
didn't
fun,
sneak
too.
Into South Park?
No, my mom took us to South Park because I watched it once with her, and she like was like, okay, this is good, actually. And then she was like, okay, I'll just tell. I'll bring all your friends in. Like,
I used to go a lot. I'm sure they do something like this now, but for a while they would do like the first show on Sundays with $6.
Oh,
so I saw like Coraline and Tropic Thunder. This is really dating it. Casino Royale. Yeah, I just remember going because it was like cheap there, and I think AMC still does on like Tuesdays or something. Everything's, but it, now it's probably like it's only $12 instead of $18. Ugh,
these tickets have gotten so expensive.
Well, they are literally like if you want an IMAX, it's like $27, $26 now.
We're talking about, you know, prices being out of hand, about the parking being difficult, about missing the quality of movies like Mo Better Blues and Ninja Turtles 3.
Movies were better.
I will say, yeah. Jack, you mentioned the Vista earlier. Vista still does 6:50 matinees, 7 days a week.
They gotta get the stadium seating in there. They have to, you know, rebuild the entire interior of the theater to my specification so that it's more like the ArcLight.
Fair.
There's only one way forward for the Vista. But the only way that we're going to get a truly good movie deal is to do a little time traveling. Let me explain. I here's another thing I did while alive on the planet Earth. I went to on web.archive.org, the Wayback Machine, to citywalkhollywood.com. I discovered that in 2004, City Walk had a movie and meal deal. For $19.95, you would get a selected menu item from one of City Walk's fine restaurants. You would see a movie. Yeah, there's a minimum two persons, so you do it on a date. But $19.95, a meal, a movie, and an $8 parking rebate. And what I thought is that we should all together travel back to 2004 and pick out our individual ideal movie meal deals. So what I have with me, let me reach into my laptop case. I will distribute these. I have printed out from the Wayback Machine. If you could pass this down to
when
Mike,
you
Jason.
You said you had a lot. It's all becoming crystal clear.
Yes, indeed.
Wow, you stapled papers together.
I collated them. Thank you very much. Because that would be so much shuffling on the podcast.
A lot of black ink, too.
Yeah. I wasted my own gray and black ink. So what you have in front of you is a list of all of the qualifying menu items at fine City Walk establishments that you could have picked, choose one only, and a list of the 100 top grossing films of 2004. Now, I don't know if these films actually played at City Walk at the time, but let's make an assumption. And by the way, I'm no blockbuster, you know, big wig. If there is a more obscure film of 2004 that you would like to select, feel free. But let's all say our idealized 2004 night. I'm going to go first so you guys have a second to look. I thought the most appetizing meal to me was the classic combo at the Hard Rock Cafe of a hamburger with French fries and a coffee.
Sure.
Sounds great to me. And I will, and it's also the closest restaurant to the movie theater.
You get a good seat.
And get there because seat reservation was not so much a thing back then. So you have to be on time. And I am going to get there and I'm going to see a movie I still have never seen. And what better way than seeing it in time travel? I'm going to see Tom Hanks in The Terminal because I feel like I can really relate to the tale of a man trapped in a small retail area with limited dining and shopping options.
Sure.
So you don't get cafe in the terminal.
You don't get to bring in the meal with you. This is like you go for a meal at the restaurant.
Yeah, it's a dinner and a movie,
gotcha.
And you have to bring a date. So you know, maybe keep that in mind. Maybe it's it doesn't have to be. It could be
and
something.
What year was this again?
2004. So feel free to apply if you were dating somebody at the time, or if you just want to bring one of your bros. It's okay. Up to you.
I think I'm ready.
I'll bring my 2004 girlfriend. She's coming along. Jenna, let's have fun at the terminal. So you guys feel free to also say who you'd select for this.
Well, I think I'm going to go with Carl Strauss and get the New Orleans dirty rice.
Yum.
Usually a solid food choice. I'm having a tough time deciding, though, whether I want to see Shrek 2 or The Passion of the Christ.
Yeah.
Two movies I did see in the theaters.
I understand. That's a tough one. That's a pickle. Don't you have to see The Passion, though?
Just for the theater experience,
like we were talking about with Borat. Like,
oh, yeah.
It's like Passion is better with a crowd. You know what I mean?
All the hooting and hollering you're going to hear in the theater. It's fun.
Shrek 2, you're going to be laughing as much at home as you would be in the theater.
I'm going to laugh wherever I have the Shrek 2 experience.
Exactly.
I could be on a plane and be having that experience.
Who's going with it? Who's special to you in 2004? You want to take on a nice Passion date?
Probably just one of my high school roommate or college roommates. People I hung out with in 2004.
Hey, sounds good. Well, have a good time, guys.
Yeah.
Mike, you ready?
All right. Well, I think I figured out. So I'm trying to really get in the head of me in 2004. That's like, I'm not trying to do what would be fun now. I'm trying to think where I was at. I was 20 years old. I had literally just gotten my first girlfriend.
Oh, nice.
And we were together. We were very into independent stuff, you know.
Oh yes,
we were into indie music, all the coolest indie music, all the coolest indie films.
Oh, I think I know where you're going with it.
So I think, you know, we're not maybe gonna have a hamburger or a cheeseburger. We're gonna get something a lot more exotic, like salmon teriyaki wasabi. Okay, we don't just have like the normal meal. We have something
for sure.
A little bit more creative
and
innovative.
Culture.
And of course, we're going to see the hippest indie film with the hippest indie music.
Yeah. I think I know what that
number
is.
Number 93, Garden State.
Wow.
That's the one.
We are going to tear up when the Frou Frou song comes on.
Right.
When he talks about his mom hitting her head on the dishwasher.
When was this time when we were happy?
And we're going to be like, that was good. Like, that really kind of spoke to a generation, and that's a hell of a soundtrack. The Shins are wonderful.
It'll change your life,
band,
I swear.
And they did change our life.
They changed it. I mean, you guys, I mean, it's hard to say, but could you, like, it would just adding up all the concrete ways that the Shins changed all of our lives.
Well, I did purchase Shoots Too Narrow, which was their follow-up album.
The first Shins album was like 3 years old at the point the Garden State came out, by the way.
Yes,
most of those songs were had been around for a while.
The song was what, Carrying Is Creepy? Is that
there's
the
two. Mm-hmm. I forget what the other one was. There's two on there.
Am I going to have to pay royalties now? I got to pay Getty and pay the Shins for singing all their songs.
The Shins did a good job of like hitting all the parameters for like young men around that time. Because as somebody who's like not that into or knows about music, I know about the Shins because of their music appearing in the anime FLCL.
Oh,
so no matter what type of weird little young man you were around the turn of the century,
but
you were
going to
be aware of the
that?
Shins.
That's a different, what are they called?
I think they just use Shins music in throughout the series, unless I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure they, or maybe it's the pillows that are used.
I think it's the pillows. Yeah.
Okay, well,
because I was a big fan of
Fully
Shuly.
So cut this.
The Cineplex Odeon, can you?
No.
Probably not.
It's like you're back in 2004 again.
Yeah.
Fully Cooly Progressive, currently airing on Adult Swim.
Well, okay, so to start with, you know, I'm putting myself in my shoes when I was in 2004, just like Mike as well. I also don't want to brag, but I did have a girlfriend as well. This would have been
very good.
Coming
well,
right to
well,
the end
well.
Of
well, look at the millionaires.
Well, this would have been coming to the end of high school, where I did not date a single person.
Yep.
And
yeah,
so right at the end of high school, I think for about like a couple months, I did find a way to get a girlfriend. So I did have a girlfriend in high school, and I'm going to beat you guys up after this.
Scott had one that he saw twice.
Oh, wow.
In high school.
Wait, the what? Right? Oh, yes. I was in a long distance relationship where I saw her once a year. Yeah.
We just did a little fist bump over
long
here.
Distance.
So, but Nadia was a vegetarian, mm-hmm. Who I joined the recycling club to impress. And so that just the fact that she's a vegetarian knocks out Gladstones, which mm-hmm. doesn't have a vegetarian option. It knocks out not a Hard Rock. It doesn't knock out a Hard Rock.
Stuff there.
There's some options.
You
want to
treat her something that's not a little.
It's
going to
knock
Caesar
out
salad.
Tony Roma's. Mm-hmm. It's going to knock out the wasabi at City Walk. Mm-hmm. So I think that for us, we probably would have been going with Shanghai and Maine around that time.
Oh, nice.
I think that I would have been very happy with the Mongolian beef or the sweet and sour chicken. Any of the meat options, really. I guess I'll just choose the sweet and sour chicken for the purposes of this. And she would, of course, be relegated to the vegetable chow mein as her only option.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as the films we could see, I mean, it's also hard for me to pick one as well. But going with who I knew I was in 2004, I'm going to have to go with just the movie that comes in right after Mike's Garden State, and that, of course, is Jersey Girl.
I don't think
that I would have liked it after having seen the movie, but being well aware of how big a fan I was mm-hmm. of Kevin Smith around that time, I think I definitely would have checked out Jersey Girl.
Was that the first film past the quadrilogy, the quintrilogy?
They had closed the book on the View Askew universe.
The View Askew universe was finally over. It's never coming
never
back.
Coming back.
Yep. And then,
which is
6 months later, it was back.
Yeah.
Right after Jersey Girl,
coincidentally, he decided we're opening the book back up, and there's more tales to tell in the View Askew universe.
Features the great Jersey specific of George Carlin saying, "Don't throw out that grease. I needed to cook the pork roll."
We all remember
a type
that.
Of rolled meat specific to North and South Jersey and the Philadelphia area.
I really like everybody's choices there. I think we're all having mm-hmm. fun nights.
What's a great night, no matter
yeah.
what.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't. That's maybe a high note to take it out on. But I also want to wrap back around to the legitimate political quagmire that happened at this theater. Hopefully, this isn't too much of a bummer. But here's what happened: pre-City Walk, when it's just that theater up there amidst the orange groves, Boys in the Hood is released, and there was a shooting at City Walk, a non-deadly shooting, but the movie, the screening did not happen. There was like gunfire rang out before the movie even started. Screening canceled. So then that was the first film, I believe, by John Singleton. When his next movie, Poetic Justice, came out, the Cineplex Odeon refused to show it, citing the previous example of what happened when we showed Boys in the Hood. The NAACP was really upset about it. They reached out to LA Mayor Richard Reardon saying, "What do you think about this?" And he said, "Let business do its thing. If that's their judgment, that's their judgment." NAACP called Reardon's comments appalling. "We can't just let business do its thing." Called it a blatantly racist move. And so, yeah, here you go. Actually, the cross section of City Walk politics and films.
Sure, here we are. Yeah. I mean, you know, this has echoes that reverberate even today to, you know, cake shops refusing to make wedding cakes for gay people.
That's kind of true, isn't it?
And then also, you know, Sarah Huckabee Sanders not getting served at the Red Hen in Lexington, Virginia.
I think everywhere at City Walk would be very cordial to Sarah.
Think so?
I think she can
I think that there are some spots in City Walk that maybe wouldn't serve Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
Mm. Mm, if we had to eyeball it, yeah.
Voodoo
would not.
Voodoo
They're
shouldn't.
Progressive.
Yeah, they wouldn't.
The Hard Rock Cafe.
Love All, Serve All. They might have been hoisted by their own petard.
They have to. They have no choice.
Margaritaville, she's
queen
fine. She's fine in Margaritaville.
Though Buffett himself is liberal.
Yeah.
But probably, but not I so.
Think but millionaire
tent.
Liberal.
It's a big tent. It's yeah. a big tent.
I am. She probably wouldn't be allowed to do the iFly indoor skydiving because people would throw things at the...
Yeah,
that's true. Too. Break the glass. When you I'd be worried that if she went to do the Zen Zone, that if the... Though the very nice people at the Zen Zone, they have some crazy tools and stuff they can, like... ramp up and get going at full speed, and they might be able to suffocate her.
They attached electrodes to me and they shot electricity through me, and then when I tried to put it up to 10, it was truly like I was being tortured.
Oh, is that the... Didn't they used to have that at the... when it was the arcade there where Margaritaville was?
Did they have what?
Was they had like a chair that you would like hold the handles, and it was like supposed to be electrocuting you.
I remember those in arcades. Yeah, no, this is like more like a holistic kind of massage thing.
Oh, gotcha.
It's literally like a thing that sends a jolt of electricity through your body.
Yeah.
So if if a Zen Zone employee was upset and took their anger out on Sarah Sanders, they could crank some of those electrical implements up all the way.
Yeah.
That's the power that the Zen Zone... We were putting a lot of trust in the hands of the Zen Zone people, that they weren't mad at us about like our review of a previous Universal ride. Mm-hmm. Like they disagreed with our views on what had we done by then, Back to the Future. Yeah. Or they're like, no, we hate E.T. How dare you talk about how much you love it?
Scott, when you alluded earlier that there was like political stuff about City Walk, I thought you were talking about the Universal Evolution Plan, which is constantly being updated and never fulfilled, about how they wanted to add extra lanes to Barham Boulevard and build apartments on the back lot.
Oh, that's right.
I would love to live in the back lot.
If you could live
the former spot of the Psycho House.
Yeah, I would love to live in the exact place where King Kong burned down.
Well, I believe they wanted to build them and more shops and a pedestrian mall on top of what is now the Superstore itself.
Oh, man. Mm. I was going to say that no matter where Sarah Huckabee Sanders got kicked out at Universal, the thing that I put forward, I theorized that no matter where it is, Chris Pratt would come to her defense. Chris Pratt, a member of the Jurassic family, I think would like make a comment being like, we should welcome, you know, Sarah Sanders.
And he's like famously a... You know, he sang Margaritaville at the opening of Jurassic World.
With Jimmy Buffett and producer Frank Marshall.
So he might be hanging out at Margaritaville already.
When it happens.
Also, I don't think we talked about this.
He might come up doing his dino hand stance and be like, let her eat, let her eat.
Sarah, it's me, Chris. He also, by the way, worked at not the City Walk Bubba Gumps, but he worked at the Maui one, the one where my grandfather had a heart attack.
I'm sorry to hear that.
He was literally... Chris Pratt was literally discovered by... It's like he was being a charming waiter he was waiting on somebody who said, you know, I'm a director. Would you want to be in my movie?
Sure. Was it James Toback?
Yeah, it's like he was serving a table for Jeffrey Epstein. Discovered in Hawaii.
No, you know what's weird?
Was it David Gordon Green? Because he shows up in one of those early movies.
The strange thing is it was Ray Dawn Chong, the female lead of Commando. And she took him up on it, flew him out to L.A. 4 days later, and
that's
he's
not
in his
true.
First
that
movie.
Can't be true.
He's in the movie, and he was a waiter there.
So what the fuck? Like you're just literally like come to like fly from Hawaii to whatever.
Yeah,
I guess.
But we're not. This isn't a major film. Who knows what this movie is?
You used to just sit at the counter at Schwab's Pharmacy, and then you know.
I don't believe that tale. I think that's grown in the telling, is what I think.
Perhaps. Yeah. There's no way to know. But we do know that he would leap to Sarah's defense.
Most of these stories, everyone leaves out, like, a rich parent or, like, a connected parent to, like, an agent or something. And then there's, like, just, like, this charming story where, like, I was living in my car and I didn't know. And somebody saw me and I waved to them and they said I looked cute on screen. And then I was in a movie. And it's
my aunt told me to go to this restaurant, seek out this person, and represent them.
George Clooney was just in that studio apartment with his little pig.
Right. Yeah. Alden Ehrenreich was just at the bar mitzvah where Steven Spielberg discovered him. That's true. Do you guys know that? That's true.
That's a very... Cool. Yeah, his first... Spielberg saw him in a video that was made specifically...
That forehead needs to be on the silver screen.
So on
you
the widest
on that forehead.
If you saw it at the City Walk IMAX, one of the biggest screens in the city.
You know, the actual Alden Ehrenreich's forehead was the size of a regular screen. If you watch it in IMAX, that's actually the size of.
You could project a regular size movie within the movie
within
screen.
Solo on his forehead.
Well, let's get that event moving up at Cineplex Odeon. And with that, Jack Allison, you survived podcast The Ride. There was a ton there.
I didn't even tell the story about when I waited late at night at the GameStop before it was Things from Another World to buy, I think, Grand Theft Auto San Andreas. And comedy guy interviewed me in line for funny.com or something like that. And then tried to edit it to make me look like a fool for staying up so late buying a video game. What a nerd I was.
Comedy websites would never make people look foolish or take advantage of you. You have no experience with
that. I'm well guilty of it myself. So
that's what we do.
But that happened.
That's the same. That's the same location where you got interviewed about the simulator ride.
Crazily enough, that is true. You spend enough time around that area in City Walk, and you get a camera shoved in your face. That's just the magic of show business.
Hanging out up at City Walk, and somebody put a camera on me, and before I knew it, I was a star.
Star of a funny.com video.
I just wanted to go to Gladstone's for some fried fish, and I got caught up in a jaywalking segment.
That's the gold standard. Funny.com and on their custom fat flash player that can't embed or whatever. That's kid stuff. Jaywalking, that's what we all shoot for.
You want to get roasted because you don't know who the 22nd president was.
Right,
offhand.
Exactly. Yeah. I want Jay Leno of all people decked out in nothing but denim to call me a fucking idiot on TV because I don't know, can't name all the Supreme Court justices in the 90s.
That was the World Cup of looking like an idiot for comedy. I don't know where you go now if you want to be a celebrated idiot without jaywalking.
Well, Trevor Noah just plays a clip of you and says this guy looks ridiculous. Yeah, and then they move on, right?
Yeah, you'd be lucky to get onto. The Joel McHale show. So what has to happen is that someone needs to do a video of you where you look stupid, and that goes viral, and then you're on every show, and then you're on every single show, and everybody's got their little comment for you.
And if it doesn't happen in a timely fashion, you're crossing your fingers for next season of Tosh.
Well, that's huge. It's huge to get Tosh, but it's a little more on a longer timeline.
Time I made a video. That was a sketch that was intended to be funny. It was on my YouTube, and I got called by a Tosh producer who wanted to use it on the show as if it was found object.
Well, it was. He found it.
He found it. Yeah. Him, a real Hollywood guy, and me, some rube somewhere. And he called me. I was working at Funny or Die at the time, so I had a Hollywood job. And this guy called me and could not have been more condescending on the phone. Could not have thought I was more of a Kansas kid. And he was like, so what we can do, we can pay you $100 for that. And I know that's not a lot of money, but you know what? Maybe it's a little bit. You could buy a new camera. That might be nice. And I'm just I'm in the parking lot, and
A lot of times with Tosh, though, they're just dealing with people who own a video they took of someone dying. And so it's less a personal investment from the videographer, because mostly they just took a video of somebody getting killed and then put that online.
And whereas you are just there hey man, I think I'm down the street from you.
Upstairs. I can see you. Wait. I'm waving. Can you see me?
Are you sitting at the Daily Grill outside calling me? I can see you.
Jack, thanks for being here. Anything you'd like to plug or promote?
Not really. I do the Struggle Session podcast, which is at patreon.com/strugglesession, and I'm on Twitter at Jack Allison LOL, and I'm doing the Mitch Live pretty soon, which is gonna be
Have happened by the time this is
we'll have done Mitch Live recently, which is we're doing a brand new show that's based on kind of similar you know, theme, like another show we did before. But yeah, it's with Mike Mitchell, famously on the Doughboys podcast, interviewing people and all that kind of bullshit. So, you know, enjoy it if it's happening still.
You're streaming that on Twitch. Are you going to archive it? Like,
yeah, I think so. I'm not sure what we're going to do with that archive. I think we're going to have an archive. I'm not sure if we'll like have it live immediately or what the fuck. We'll throw it in the Bugman LLC vault or something like that. But
or if you'll play it, if you'll sneak in with a projector to the IMAX theater and play
it on Alden's forehead
the next time is an Alden movie.
Well,
know?
I mean, of course,
Han Solo too.
The tale of the, what the fuck were they called? Like the bad guys in Solo.
Like, oh yeah,
like who Darth Maul is in charge of? Like Crimson Dawn. The tale of Crimson Dawn needs to continue.
Solo 2, presumably. Crimson Dawn.
Yeah, Solo 2, Crimson Dawn.
So look for Mitch live playing exclusively inside a frame of Solo 2, Crimson Dawn.
Finally, the Gotti of Star Wars movies. Yeah. Finally, something about organized crime.
Yeah, fellas, you know where we're at. We gotta wrap this. We'll see you tomorrow. We'll keep plugging our stuff tomorrow.
Also, we just got the stone. I heard.
Oh my god, I totally
Sector
forgot. 13
stone is finally appearing to us,
and the stone is in the shape, I can't quite see it, guys. This one, it's in the shape of
this one is it's oval shaped like that classic 90s oval logo that a lot of things use. Sure. And it's just got a picture of all the members of Dishwalla in mess t-shirts.
Yeah, it's weird that a stone has a picture on it.
Oh, now I see it. I'm sorry. Yeah. My vision is blurry today. Mm-hmm. Now it's in front of us. We completed Sector 13. Mm-hmm. The Sector Keeper is on his way to being resuscitated, and we're on our way to our next sector. Mm-hmm. We'll see you tomorrow.
Is this come out like 7 days a week, this podcast?
Yes. Yeah.
this series is coming out
forever. Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Mike Carlson, Jason Sheridan, Scott Gardner, Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit ForeverDogPodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram @ForeverDogTeam and liking our page on Facebook.